If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in every Wednesday at 5:30 Pacific Standard Time and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for Closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Axar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the light and love of the unified field that we all share. I'm a voice from that oneness, and so are you. Tonight we're going to be examining our wallpaper. Wallpaper. The lens that we're going to be using to examine our wallpaper is quantum mechanics, the unified field theories, and the Course in Miracles. So take a good deep breath. And turn the inner gaze of your spotlight, if you will. Imagine your Christ consciousness is like a big light tower. And scan the sea of your emotions and your mental landscape. And your consciousness. And just see where you are in yourself tonight. How do things sit with you in your awareness of self? What's on your wallpaper? So we're going to be using our life and our house of consciousness as a metaphor tonight. And that inner house of consciousness is always exactly replicated in our outer environment. Our outer house, which have gathered around you in your immediate room, your living space, matches and duplicates and mirrors what you put in your inner wallpaper, your inner house of consciousness. You don't actually live in the outer world. You live in the inner world. And today, we are more and more living in cyberspace. We don't really live so much in the outer world as we live facing our computer screens, facing our television sets, or facing our inner self if we're meditators. So the outer is not the place to make any kind of a shift if you want to change anything in your outer environment. The only place that you can start is changing your wallpaper. We use that often in computer speak. As the background that we have on our screen, or what we have as the background of our websites. But what do we have on the computer screen of our consciousness? And the background, the white noise, if you will, the elevator music, the background music of our life, what is the drone zone that you have going on in your consciousness? What is going on in your background right now? Are you, as many people are, largely unconscious of what's going on or in avoidance of it? For example, how do you come home in the evening from your job? A lot of people that we see on television, they head for the bar, they make themselves a martini, they kick off their shoes. Maybe they switch on the TV. Do you anesthetize, avoid, medicate, or try to avoid what is there in your home, in your mind, in your consciousness? Are you at home in yourself and comfortable in yourself? I mean, after all, the one person that you can never get away from is yourself. the one person that you take wherever you go is yourself. The one companion you will have throughout eternity is the self. Are you comfortable in that self? Do you know that self? Are you comfortable right now in that self, in that consciousness, with that wallpaper, with the pictures that you've hung on the walls of your mind, with the background music that you have playing as the backdrop of your awareness? Or do you avoid thinking about it, confronting it, facing it? Have you ever really faced your fears? My teacher has often said that it takes great courage to see the face of God, because you have to see your own face first, all of your faces. And the face of fear is something that we often really avoid looking into the face of. People fear death, aging, disease, incapacitation, loss of personal freedom and sovereignty. They fear lack, loss of loved ones or possessions. And this is something that many people subconsciously and unconsciously avoid thinking of. A Course in Miracles says that our most fundamental fear is death. And yet, it's also, according to the Course in Miracles, the basic substratum of every illusion in our life. The substratum of every illusion, the father of lies, is the belief in death. Now, that seems like an oxymoron, perhaps, because if you believe you've been born, of course, what goes along with birth is death. But can unlimited awareness, can that unified field of consciousness, that is who and what we are, totally beyond form, what we are realizing as we become enlightened more and more to that which is that we don't live in a body. We may live in a material concept of self, but we really don't live confined in a body. And if we're not a body, then we could never be born, and we could never die. Nor does any other passage in the illusion of time make sense to one who has fully awakened to their reality. I like the statement of Rumi, where he says, "You are truth from head to toe. Now, what else would you like to know?" So our entire life is a meditative adventure of self-discovery, of self-revelation, and of falling in love with that which we are. In fact, if you want to get rid of all of your sad stories, all of your enemies, and all of your collective baddies, become one with them. Because when you become one with whatever it is, you have dissolved the energy of separation, which is false evidence appearing real. Yep, fear. So fear is always an evidence that you're looking at something that's not there. So the things that you're afraid of, death, aging, disease, all of those things have no meaning when you know who you are, that you are formless consciousness, awareness, completely unlimited awareness within a unified field of ever-expanding life, potentiality, adventure, ongoing life. When we say eternal, we don't mean long time. We mean transcending time. Transcending time. which has to do with form. In the world of form, you have dissolution, because form is a false manifestation born out of our collective belief in it. So as we move into this Aquarian age of the consciousness paradigm, of cyberspace, of inner transformation, inner revelation, inner awakening, we are moving from investing ourselves so heavily into our form life, and things of material appearance. That is the good news. That is the exciting paradigm that we're moving into. So the first place we want to look at tonight is to examine our consciousness and find out what's there. For example, if your mental health had a color, what color would it be? What color have you painted the walls of your inner self? What color, if you have your own home, have you chosen to paint your outer house? What pictures do you have in your outer house? What kind of artwork? What kind of things do you fill your mind with when you listen to music or radio? Can you be comfortable in silence? Can you be comfortable and at home with the inner sound of God that rings and sings in you when you're very still, that cosmic music? Can you be happy and comfortable and at home with your own company, your own thoughts? Can you trust your own feedback to give you positive and encouraging messages? Or have you allowed the ego mind to be the intruder into that sacred oneness that you hold always as part and parcel of Source? It's very important to look at this, because there's no escaping it. You who have wanted to be enlightened, this is what it takes, the courage to look and see what's there. We manifest, beloveds, our wallpaper. Often in my field come upon people who have very impractical things that they ask for. Well, I want to levitate. I want to learn how to walk through walls. I want to win the lottery. I want to be able to, beam myself from here to wherever without taking a plane. Beloveds, you don't really want that, because the paparazzi would dog your steps from here till kingdom come. They would probably put electrodes on your head and put you, if not in a padded cell, at least in some sort of a laboratory so that they could study you. Let's get real. Really, what you want is yourself without your lack of awareness, without those unconscious states that, regardless of whether or not your consciousness, you're conscious of them, manifest as the life and the environment that you live in, both within and without. So right now, make a shift. There is no outer life. There is only the life that you share in the unified field. You could call it God, the life that you share with God. But that is all. There is no outer. There is no other. There is only the self, eternal, ever-expanding awareness and love. So when you walk about in the house of your mind, what is the atmosphere like? Is it pleasant or unpleasant? Do you immediately feel at home in your mind, in your life, with your thoughts? There is such a peace in the heart and mind and life of someone who has become at peace with the self. We spend every kind of money you can imagine to find that peace in every kind of a seminar, in every kind of a self-help book, in every kind of an experience. But yet, it can only be gotten from within, by your own efforts and your own courage to look. So, as you look tonight, what is going on in the background of your mind? Many people live from an unconscious state of discontent without realizing it. This is called the unconscious, unawakened dream self, or the unexamined life. So examine it now. It's, you know, when people live from that unconscious state, it's like being asleep and dreaming, but not aware you're asleep and dreaming. And this sleeping self is the part that we are now, as light workers, shining away by the choice to look, the choice to be present peacefully with our process of revelation. That's what the whole thing of revelation is about. These end times, so-called, is the end of the sleeping, unawakened dream self and the awakening and revelation and uncovering of that awareness that's always been there. We've just lost sight of it. So this unconscious background is the cause of all suffering. All suffering. Everything that torments you and us collectively is the product of that unconscious, unexamined life that we collectively then project outwardly and call it the world. Or the way things are. Or the state of affairs. Or that's just the way it is. That's life. That's not life. That's the nightmare, the collective nightmare, from which we all wish to awaken. Oh, we could call it a peaceful world. But, beloved, you don't create peace by fighting outwardly to create it. I mean, if you want an oxymoron, try fighting for peace. How crazy is that? But we don't question the craziness, and that is what's really crazy. We accept unconsciousness and dreaming and an unexamined life as if it were normal. I'll tell you what's normal. What's normal is miracles. Of course, a miracle says that miracles are natural and should occur every day. And when they do not occur, something has gone wrong. Miracles are always love-based. Miracles always transcend the body. They are sudden shifts into invisibility, away from the bodily level. And that is why they heal. Realizing that you're not a body is the very birth of true joy. In fact, there's two thoughts that will always give you a sense of lightness and release. One of them is, I need do nothing. It's not about another form of doingness. It's about moving from doing to being. And so every time we move from this locked-in, artificial self-definition that I'm a body that gets old, that's going to die one day, that's constantly being threatened by a world that is so unpredictable. As long as you identify with that part of yourself, you're probably going to need a martini to get through the night. But there's another way. There's another way. And we're going to find it. And when we join in the intention to find together the way to freedom, the way to peace, personally, individually, and collectively, globally, so that everybody on the planet can participate in a win-win scenario, then you're really a light worker. And moreover, you're a light bearer. And because we live in a unified field where everyone and everything is eternally linked, imagine this. There is nothing separate in all of the universe. We are part and parcel. We're joined at the hip. We're joined at the mind. We're joined at the heart. We are one unified godness. Godness, yes, one unified godness. We are one. And everything you do in the privacy of your little heart and mind and even your physical life touches every single part, like a spider in a spider web. Every little insect that touches that spider's web causes that reverberation throughout the web. That's why grandmother spider and the spider web is often a metaphor used for the collective grid field that we all share. And Dr. Rupert Sheldrake has recently brought to our attention that we live in a morphogenetic field. We're linked. Of course, esotericists have known that forever and a day. It's called the etheric field. But Dr. Sheldrake is a biophysicist. So his word, based on hard science, quote, quote, has an impact on reducing that illusion that we've bought into of the solidity of matter. What is matter but compressed, densified light and sound, or the particle and the wave? And you can reduce it to ever more minuscule energies all the way down to the quark. And when they keep looking, they'll find things even smaller than the quark. But the point is that we are all intrinsically woven into the tapestry of divine, eternal life. And what we do, we think, we choose, affects everything, everyone. That's why it says in the Bible that God is aware of the dropping of a single leaf, the flutter of a single bird's wing. That's what that means. That spider of the divine self is aware of every tiny touch on that grid field, that web of life that we all share. Most of us have seen the beautiful flower of life symbol that Drunvalo Melchizedek has as his logo, which is so beautiful. And everything, that's the divine geometric matrix, if you will, for this, the totality of all consciousness in this particular time and space zone. And maybe beyond, for all we know. So, these are some of the things that we need to really be meditating on. And when you meditate, it simply means to consider deeply, without distraction, with one-pointed attention and focus. Just focalize on it. I suggest you read Chapter 1 in the text of A Course in Miracles, which gives the principles behind all miracles. And it's called The Meaning of Miracles. Take your time, read it slowly, take each one of the statements like a meditation, and apply it to your own situation and your own life so that you can begin to be a miracle worker, a miracle expector, a miracle perpetrator, a miracle manifester, and a miracle participant. The second thing is that manifestation follows your basic overall energy signature. For example, living in a quantum universe of unified energy, as we've mentioned before, you develop affinity resonance with a particular overall dominant energy pattern. And that's what manifests in your life. So begin to, grab your pencil and your journal later, not now, and begin to make note of what you have manifested in your life. The things around you right now, the people, the places you go, the things that you notice and that you really like and that you don't like are all part of your manifestation. So what have you manifested? Then match it to your inner state. Where did that come from? Can you trace it to its inception? When did that particular manifestation fall into place for you? And as you trace each of these manifestations, you will find that your inner and your outer matched perfectly, and that's why you have what you have in your life. So, it's interesting when we want to manifest something, and one thing we need to be very, very attentive to is, do we have two programs running that contradict or eliminate each other? For example, in relationships. Don't we all think of that? Let's say you want a relationship with a significant other, but at the same time, you want to be free to do your own thing. You don't want to have to cook, keep house, do someone else's laundry, or factor them into your plans and your finances, or have to accommodate their needs, their preferences, their agendas, their job schedules. You see how those two things could come into conflict? Know that the price of relationship is always having to come to agreements and compromise and sharing. You're no longer an I, but a we. So, do you really want a relationship? Or are you in relationship with yourself, and that's enough? I mean, be brutally honest with looking at that. Another thing is money. This is a big one for most light workers. Many of us come from being sadhus and yogis and monks and nuns and priests and so forth, and we've taken vows of poverty. Therefore, we get incarnated this time, and we don't have any of those vows in this life, but they're still running our financial landscape of consciousness. We want money, but at the same time, we resent people who have a lot of money. Or we talk about them, or we look down on them, or we think somehow we're more spiritual if we're poor. You know, the starving artist, or the poor mendicant monk. Why not renounce those vows of poverty and tell yourself, you know what, I'm not a sadhu in this lifetime. I'm not a monk. I'm not a nun. That means I can have money. Money is energy. In fact, it's the third ray energy of intelligence. Intelligent activity is the energy equivalent and signature of money. So to move intelligently through the world, you got to have it. No, you can't walk through walls and beam yourself to the other side of the planet. It isn't happening now, okay? That's not what's coming down, and it's not a practical thing to put your attention on. So, and if you learn to soul travel, that's an interstate anyway. It has nothing to do with the outer airlines or the price of fuel. So take your vacations inwardly in consciousness and save yourself a lot of hassle. So look at your attitudes around money. Is money comfortable with you? Some people grab it, and the minute they have it, they spend it as quickly as they can, as if it were a hot potato. It's like, get rid of it, get rid of it. They feel guilty. I remember a time in my life when I'd feel guilty if I had more than two pairs of shoes, or I'd get depressed when I went out to shop. Now, that's a strange woman for you, one who gets depressed because they go out to shop. But it was my old yogic tapes playing. It was my old stuff coming up. It was my old baggage. And so I've had to deal with relationships. I used to feel guilty every time I was with someone intimately because I was running those old celibacy tapes. I mean, look at yourself really brutally honestly. You know, strip yourself naked in your own sight and look and see what's there. How are you running your life? What's on your walls? And what's in your wallet? And what isn't in your wallet? And why? What programs are you running? And you know what? Once you become aware of your game, the game ends. Yeah, that's the beauty of revelation, is that when you see what's there clearly, you're no longer a victim of it. The unconscious has become conscious. It has become awakened within you, and never again will you be under the bondage of that unconscious, driving, undermining ego. And the ego is always unconscious, and it wants to keep you unconscious. But the ego is not who you are, and the ego is simply a little shadow of the belief in limitation that you've bought into. It's like a dark little storm cloud that hovers around that brilliant sun of your realized self. So look at relationships. Look at money. And another big one for light workers is power. Do you resent authority? Do you hate to be under someone's authority? Ah! If you haven't taken authority over your own life and you're not in an empowered state in your own life, you're going to project that outwardly as resenting authority. Hello. As within, so without. As above, so below. Those are two of the laws of the lower bipolar planes. So what is your feeling about power? Have you taken your own power, your own authority? Over what? Over yourself. Over being and doing and having really what you want. And another area to look is, are you congruent? Congruency and consistency and what's the other word I want to use? I forget it. But anyway, having thoughts and words and actions that are in harmony in that one directive that you want to achieve. For example, do you talk about, do you say money affirmations? And then when somebody wants you to go and go shopping and say, I don't have the money, or go out to eat, I don't quite have the money for that, or do you contradict as soon as you start talking in relationship to other people or spending money? Do you immediately go to lack and limitation? You see, that directly is another program that cancels out your money affirmations. Are you aware of how you speak something from your mouth and it is direct contradiction to what you say at another time in your prayers to God in your innermost heart? You see sometimes how you're running to contradictory things and then you expect to manifest? Well, you're going to manifest. But it's going to be a mixed bag, where some things you like and some things you don't like, and some things it's like a partial good with a bad news that goes right along with it. So, again, self-knowledge and self-realization are the same thing. You realize what's going on in your life at every single level. And that is what we need to do if we want to learn to manifest that golden age, live in peace, live in joy, have those relationships that are truly appropriate, have enough money to do what we want to do when we want to do it, to have what we want to have when we want to have it. That's real abundance. Living free also, free to be present with whatever is going on without resistance. Actually, that's really abundance. That's really freedom. To be in relationship lovingly with all life, that's a real relationship. And then if you have somebody that is a significant intimate other, cool. That's even frosting on the cake. But do you really want that? Do you want it enough to look? That's the price. You gotta look at your wallpaper. You gotta look at the walls that you've constructed in your life. What are those walls? Those places where you go up this far but no further. Up, can't do that because. What are your becauses? What are you using as an excuse for present freedom, present peace, present love, and present joy? You know, sometimes, I'm going to go into a storytelling mode here. Sometimes our lives, we have what we have because we've asked for what we have in our life to counterbalance previous shortcomings or downfalls. For example, I often think about this blind man who came to Sai Baba, and he said, "What can I do for you?" And the blind man said, "I want to see. Will you give me my sight?" And Sai Baba said, "Yes, I can do that, but let's look at it for a moment. Is that really what you want? Before you were born in this lifetime, in your immediate past lifetime, you prayed to God to be blind in your next life because in your previous lifetime you had a temptation to have many romantic alliances. And because that, you fell into a state that was not a good one. And so you purposed in your mind, my next life, I will never do that again. And since my eyes are the problem, I won't see. So now do you want me to restore your sight?" And it was interesting because the blind man said no. He was made aware that he had in his life what he had asked for and that it was serving him. So sometimes our limitations serve us. I like to think of Stephen Hawking that I mentioned in a recent show. He created a life for himself where nothing worked but his brain. It was enough already. He's the greatest mind, the greatest scientist on the planet. But he wasn't distracted by anything else. He could keep his full focus on that brilliant, brilliant insight he had into life and the universe. And then there was the invisible man that came to Sai Baba. We used to laugh about him on the Darshan line. He was a devotee that came, and Sai Baba would look over him, around him, reach over him, look to either side of him, talk to people over him, on either side of him, and it was as if he was invisible. Well, he got more and more upset, more and more upset. Finally, after 6 months of this invisible treatment, he stands up in the middle of darshan, you know, when Sai Baba was walking around and talking to people and taking their written prayers and their letters. And he said, "When are you going to notice me, Baba? I've been sitting here waiting for you to notice me for 6 months." And Sai Baba looked at him calmly, and he said, "And I've been waiting for you to notice me for 2,000 years." Whoa. And of course, he was speaking from the divine self. There was another story I heard directly from an Indian man and his family when I was in India with Sai Baba. And they lost a husband, a father, and a grandfather that was very, very dear to the family. And they were in terrible mourning. And even though they believed, you know, one day they would be with him again and all of that, wasn't comforting them. So Sai Baba called the family in for an interview. And he waved his hand. And all of a sudden, the wall of the interview room revealed the presence of the father, the husband, the grandfather, standing there. And, of course, the family was shocked. And the man stepped through this dimensional doorway that Sai Baba had opened and said, "See here, I'm happy. I've done my life. I have fulfilled my dharma. God has given me freedom to live in this wonderful, wonderful state. And your grief keeps calling me back and calling me back, and I'm worried about you. I don't want you to be sad. I don't want you to grieve. I want you to remember the times we shared. Please release me so that I can continue on with this greater life that I'm living now. One day you'll join me here. In the meantime, let me go." And it was interesting. I heard that story from that man himself. I had another very dear friend many years ago. His name was Walter Cowan, and he was a great devotee of Sai Baba. And his wife, Helen Cowan, they started the Satya Sai Baba Book Center in Tustin, California, which is still selling Baba's books. I knew the Cowans very well. I was often a guest in their home. And Walter went to India 1 year, and he died of, I think it was pneumonia or congestive heart failure. He was taken, and Sai Baba at the time was some distance away giving a talk. I believe it was in Madras. And Sai Baba paused for a moment and said to his translator, "Cowan is dead," and went on with his talk. After his talk was finished, leisurely, I think some hours, I believe it was 4 hours that Cowan had been dead, and he was in the morgue in the hospital, and Sai Baba came to the hospital, asked to see the body, and in the presence of this doctor, whom I also spoke to, met at the ashram and spoke to, and heard the story directly from him, as well as from Walter Cowan, he pulled back the sheet from the corpse and said, "Cowan, what are you doing? I haven't given you permission to leave. What's this nonsense? Get up, get up." Whereupon he resurrected. But the story he had to tell was amazing because he had a full conscious experience of going before the judge, if you will, the 24 elders, where they read all of his past lives and all of the things he'd done. And Sai Baba was with him on the other side and said, "He has not finished his work. He would like permission to return to his body to complete his work." At which point, the man who was presiding over this meeting, or the Elohim, whatever you want to call him, said, "Granted," and gave him into the custody of Sai Baba. So he came back healed completely of a dreadful fear of death. So the fear of death was gone. He was healed from diabetes and advanced kidney disease. His body was restored to health. His hair, which I noticed immediately, had gone from gray to black again. And he looked wonderful. And he said that his reason for wanting to come back turned out to be his mission, which was to write a story about his experience so that other people could realize there's life after death and there's nothing to fear. And so he lived for, I think it was about a year and a half after this death experience, and then he passed away in the most wonderful of ways, where he was conscious, he was free of the fear of death, and of course he walked directly into the presence of Sai Baba. That was it. So, you see, his resurrection, if you will, was part of his mission, but he didn't know that. It was built into his game plan or his role. So another way to look at your life is that you've been assigned a role. You've been cast into a role exactly like an actor, exactly like an actor in a play. And your duty is to do your role as well as you can. Be a good actor. Whatever you're typecast as, do it to the nines. Do it full out. Downstage, center, front, under the spotlights, live it big, live it loud. That's your role in life. So what role are you cast in, beloved? Have you ever really asked yourself that? Or do you look at all the movie and sports stars and you wish? Or the saints and sages and you wish? Well, you know what? Their story isn't nearly as wonderful as yours because they can't do your story. And moreover, you can't do their story. So let's look at this. Let's look at it very, very honestly and clearly. Who are you? What is your role that you're cast in? What is your message? And what do you need to do to come into a comfortable environment in the house of your consciousness? Can you share that house with the beloved, with the Lord, with God, within the unified field of interconnected life? Can you be at peace with it? Can you be happy? Can you let go the background of sadness, depression, whatever your unexamined litany of misery and suffering happens to be? Can you let it go? Can you turn on a happy sound? Can you begin to make a shift in your awareness to what does work, what you do have, what you do have as resources, what does work, what you have drawn into your life that's wonderful. A second thing I would like to offer you tonight is to create your own life landscape. It's where you take a wall in your house or a door. It could be your desire door or your wishing wall. Not your wailing wall, your wishing wall. And put pictures and statements and cutouts from magazines, whatever, that represent what the elements that you'd like to have in your life. You know, it's interesting. Many years ago, I did that. I had a door, and I cut out things, and I put it on my door in my bedroom. And one of the things I cut out was a really soft, cushy lounger made of that soft fabric. It's really, really comfortable. I kid you not. After having that on my door for, a few months, I decided to take all the pictures down and started looking at them. And when I did that and forgot all about it, I went down one day and sitting, I swear to God, sitting on the corner where I had my house was this beautiful brown lounger chair. And in Los Angeles, I don't know if they still do that. Probably they do. But people would put out on the street corner what they didn't want anymore. And it was up for grabs, you know, whoever wanted it. So somebody had put this perfectly good lounger out there. I looked at it. There was nothing wrong with it whatsoever. So we drug it up and brought it into my house. And there was my lounger, exactly as I had imagined it in my mind. Some years later, I also had a picture of the Sea of Galilee. Had it up in the bathroom. So when I'd be having my bath, I'd be imagining the Sea of Galilee and how much I loved that. And would you know that produced for me 2 trips to Israel, where I was baptized in the Sea of Galilee, and I swam in the Sea of Galilee, and I went out on one of those fishermen's boats like Jesus did on the Sea of Galilee. I also had a picture of a pyramid and several Egyptian scenes. I wasn't really thinking about going to Egypt. I was more thinking of it as a symbol for mystery and initiation and all that. But what happened was I ended up facilitating a Nile cruise as one of the teachers that took groups of light workers down the Nile on the 12-12. And the other thing, I went to Egypt with John Roger and the group, a large group of light workers to do light work. So it produced again 2 trips to Egypt. And likewise, I found every single thing that I have really wanted in my life, I have manifested it, all of it, even though I didn't realize at the time I was manifesting wallpaper. I'm sharing with you, excuse me, things that are fresh out of my own life and anecdotes from my own experiential examinations, my own consciousness, my own relationships, my own all of that, my own issues with power and my own issues with money. All of that has become grist for the mill that I hope can inspire and liberate and encourage and enthuse those of you that listen to my shows so that you too can be and have and manifest and create out of your own richness the things that you want in your lives and that you want to experience so that you have a quality awakened life, a quality examined, enlightened, ever more empowering experience of yourself and your life and those tapped potentialities. We live in this quantum universe where everything's possible, but it's only as we turn and make a choice that that particular line of experience is activated and quickened. It's all there until you turn to look at it. Those of you that have seen the movie, What the Bleep Do We Know, you notice that Amanda, when she entered that baseball court, and there were all these random baseball games going on at the same time, and when she turned and faced, it became focused on one. And in the quantum universe that we live in, that's how manifestation occurs, is that we bring our focus, and whatever we look at becomes vivified. That's why it's so important to watch what you think, what you listen to, what you put into your mind. Input equals output. So be a researcher of what you put in and what comes out, because it's a direct ratio. Put quality into yourself. Quality words, quality thoughts, quality sounds, quality foods, quality water, quality friends, quality environment. Give yourself the best. When people say take care of yourself, that's really what they mean. Take care of your life, that it's balanced, that it's beautiful, that it's the best that you can create within the environment and the situation you have at hand. If you have a life that's confined to a wheelchair, then live it big inside yourself. Live it big in your computer. Live it big in your DVD collections and your computers and in your reading material and whatever it is that you create. Your life is lived within, so it doesn't matter if you're bedridden, if you're in a wheelchair, if you're hobbling around on crutches with one leg or no legs. It doesn't matter if you're blind. It doesn't matter if you're physically not working with full physical capacity. Begin to look at that as a blessing and see how you can use it to your advancement, how you can use it to your advantage. It has a purpose. You are the way you are for a very good reason. Now, it's your job to find out what that reason is and to make it work for you and to come into oneness with it so there's no walls of resistance and negativity. Be like water. Flow into all the areas of your life. Become one with it. Get wet in it. Let it drench you. Be full of that nectar divine, that nectar of divine life that's so rich, so full, so complete. It lacks nothing. Everything you need is at hand. Everything. There's no exceptions to this. You have in your hand or within reach in your life right now everything you need to do everything that God wants you to do now, or that you want you to do. So match inner energy with what you want to manifest in the outer. You need a mental imaging in, a mental image, a mental equivalent inside yourself of what you want to experience outside. You need an inner feeling to match the outer feeling that you want to manifest in your life. Meditate on that and see how you can begin to match the inner with your desired outer, and begin to see in the outer the potentiality of what you desire in that inner. It's always present. Moving isn't going to change it. Changing your partners isn't going to change it. Having more money is not going to change it. Having more education is not going to change it. The only thing that's going to change it is a decision that you make inside yourself. But all great outer change begins with an inner decision. So decide today to look and see what's there, and not to be afraid to see what's there. And to remember, you can never lose who you are. You can never lose what you are. And that you are unlimited, unified consciousness, living an eternal life right now. And I think that's good news. So I hope you find these shows as inspiring as I do. I practice the things I ask you to explore, and I find great value in them. So I hope you do too. So, let's see. So you have the thought of looking with the searchlight of consciousness at the self. And we're going to chant the hue, which also brings you out of body consciousness and into that unified field of love. Take a deep breath. Hue. God bless you, and happy wallpaper changing. See you next week, God willing. Adonai.
BTSRadio.com, radio that transcends the third dimension. BTSRadio.com embraces the fourth dimension, promotes natural alternative health, spreads joy.